You've heard of Grammarly, and you might think it's a fancy spell check, but people on your team have been using it and loving it for years, because it does way more than you realise. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that works seamlessly across apps and websites and can write an instant first draft in a few clicks, not a few hours. When every word your team writes is clear, concise, and on brand, companies can save 19 days per employee per year. Learn what better writing can do for your company at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
From the heart of where innovation, money, and power collide, in Silicon Valley and beyond, this is Bloomberg Technology with Emily Chang.
In San Francisco, and this is Bloomberg Technology. Coming up in the next hour, U.S. stocks oscillating as investors rush to position after the latest comments from Fed Chair Jay Powell, saying a recession could indeed lie ahead. We'll speak with Shopify President Harley Finkelstein about how it's all impacting consumers and where the company is placing its bets when it comes to the future of e-commerce. Plus, Slack unveils a slew of new features for a hybrid work world. CEO Stuart Butterfield, who's been building companies since before the dot-com boom and bust, will join us. We'll also get his view on the market meltdown. And Jeffrey Katzenberg joins to talk about the future of entertainment and disrupting legacy industries. Plus, we'll get his thoughts on what's happening at Netflix and Disney. All of that in a moment, but first I want to look at the markets with our very own Ed Ludlow. Ed, walk us through the day, and obviously everyone listening to those comments from Fed Chair Jay Powell.
Yeah, so like all eyes on the Fed, and equity markets a little bit softer. We're down by less than 0.2%, both on the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ 100. And nothing really changed in terms of what Fed Powell said on the outlook for rates. The conversation is around whether they can deliver a so-called soft landing. In other words, fight inflation without causing a recession. The quote being, it will be extremely challenging. You see tech-heavy NASDAQ 100 index down by 0.2%-ish, snapping two-day rally, a short-lived rally, yields coming down by 12 basis points on the 10-year, and Bitcoin below $20,000, kind of caught up in the move with equities in this risk-off environment. But you know how I like to do it. Let's take a step back. Let's look at the last few days of trading and look at this in the context of what we've seen in markets recently, especially on the NASDAQ 100, when you think about all of the news of the last 7 days. We started with that Fed meeting a week ago where we got a clearer picture at the outlook for rates. We're going to be at 3.25, 3.5% on interest rates by the end of this year. We're kind of trading sideways. And then today, the market not really making its mind up. Has anything materially changed? Was anything actually that new in what Fed Powell said throughout the session? What I'm hearing in the markets is that really no, but we swung between gains and losses. At one point in the session, you saw big tech up quite highly. There were some really interesting movers, though, that we can talk about in a minute. And the one thing I would say is that we're thinking clearly about recession risk. And the conversation is not necessarily if there's a recession, it's about when there's a recession.
Indeed. And obviously, there's a lot of big tech news that's driving some of these moves. I'm thinking about Amazon.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, partly what we're looking at as well in the news flow is that all of these stocks are trying to stay trading in lockstep. So you look on my board, Tesla down 0.4%. At one point, it'd been one of the biggest drivers pushing the index higher. Amazon up by a quarter of a percentage point. Netflix up 4.7% in the session. There was actual news with it when it came to Netflix. So the Wall Street Journal reporting that they are now considering a tier of subscription that is ad supported. We know that that's something they discussed at their most recent earnings as an idea. But according to this report, they are talking to partners like Google and Comcast in partnerships on ads. Altria down 9%, very quick, according to a Dow Jones report that regulators considering pulling the Juul product in which Altria has a stake completely from the US market. How long has it been since you and I discussed Juul? It went from the impact on children, flavored products with Juul, to now reports of it being pulled from the US market altogether and that having a really material impact on Altria shares this Wednesday.
All right, Ed, thank you for the roundup. Well, retail and e-commerce companies have been under pressure in the midst of rising inflation and market turmoil, but Shopify shares took a leg up today after a slew of announcements targeted at the changing nature of consumers. I want to talk about all this and more with Harley Finkelstein, president of Shopify. Harley, we've got a lot of news to get to, a lot of announcements that you made, and we'll talk about that. But first, I want to get your sense of what is happening with the economy. Shopify hasn't necessarily been spared here, but what's your feeling about just how bad this will get and if a recession is inevitable?
Thanks for having me, Emily. Always a great pleasure to be on your show. Two things. Let's first talk about the retail outlook and I think consumer sentiment. What we are seeing is that there's certainly some retail rebounds happening in areas like in-person retail, and we are well positioned there. I mentioned on the earnings call last quarter that we saw physical retail GMV up by nearly 80% year on year. And then when we add things like, you know, one of the announcements today was local inventory sync on Google and tap to pay, we really are well positioned to ensure that if physical retail is rebalancing and reopens, that Shopify merchants can also use that as well. But one of the things we're seeing from a sort of a macro perspective is that consumers are very much still voting with their dollars to support independent brands. This is something we saw happen very quickly and intensely during the pandemic. They are looking for quality products and certainly a lot of the Shopify merch are doing well there. In terms of the economy in general, it's clear that obviously inflation is at a record level, but to the degree in which merchants' wallets are stretched from higher prices, what they're beginning to do is they're looking to get more value out of every single dollar. And what we're seeing is that more merchants are coming onto Shopify and they're taking more of our products, whether it's capital or payments or fulfillment. They're leveraging our massive economies of scale while still keeping an independent business. So we think both those things lead to a lot of optimism on our side. And of course, Shopify Editions was launched today.
Right. You are making this big shift from D2C to C2C, as you call it, direct to consumer to connect to consumer. What does that mean and why do you think that's the future?
So this idea of Shopify Editions, which we announced this morning at 9:30 a.m., it introduces what we're calling the connect to consumer era of commerce. And part of it is that you know, the speed of innovation and the depth and breadth of what Shopify is building. I celebrated my 12th year anniversary last week at Shopify. So I've been around for about a third of my life. Thank you. the amount of products that we are shipping right now is stronger than ever before. We unveiled more than 100 new product updates and launches today. And I think we are moving faster than ever. And Shopify Editions is our way of sharing that momentum with the world. Now, I think, you know, I've been on the show a lot talking about direct to consumer, which really was about this one-to-one connection with the brand to the consumer, but it was very transactional. What we are noticing is that more and more consumers want to connect with these brands online, on social media, they want to attend an event or their store. They want to have more of an emotional connection whereby they can connect with brands across a whole bunch of different surface areas. And so commerce is really just not about the transaction. It's much deeper. And we think C2C really places more authenticity and loyalty and trust at the heart of every single merchant interaction. And so a lot of the products you saw today is really about us ushering in this new model for commerce.
You're also striking a big partnership with Twitter to help businesses reach buyers there. And I just wonder why now, when Twitter is facing all of this uncertainty about whether Elon Musk buys the company or not, and if this partnership will hold up in a new regime.
We think the future of retail is going to be retail everywhere. It's going to be online and offline on social media. It's going to be in person at farmers markets, at events and concerts. We really are, you know, I think we started as being an e-commerce company and, you know, about 10% of all e-commerce in the US now flows through Shopify. If we were one single aggregated store, we'd be the second largest online store in America. But the key here is that commerce in the future will happen everywhere. And so we've announced, I've come on the show and talked about our integrations with Google and Facebook and Instagram and TikTok to embed commerce there. And then the newest one that we're embedding, the newest partner we're embedding commerce with is Twitter. Now, Twitter is an interesting one. Of course, they're in the news a lot lately. But, you know, if you think about where commerce used to happen, it was always sort of around the town square. It's where the baker sold bread and the cobbler sold shoes. Twitter, in some ways, is the modern day digital town square. And so embedding commerce right into Twitter so you can turn conversation into commerce, all powered by Shopify, we think is a really great thing. And whether or not, you know, they have a new owner in the future or not. I think commerce will play a role in Twitter's future.
Okay. I recently interviewed Amazon CEO Andy Jassy, Harley, and I'm not sure if you caught this, but when I asked about Amazon's relationship with third-party sellers and the tension that has existed there between Amazon and some third-party sellers, he took kind of a dig at Shopify. Take a listen to what he had to say.
Sellers don't really long for e-commerce software. That exists in lots of places, and it's not very expensive. What they love about selling on Amazon is that they get access to our hundreds of millions of customers, and that completely changes what their prospects can be in terms of the businesses they're building.
What's your response to that?
I think that it is quite clear that the future of retail is going to have direct connection between brands and the consumers. Look, I mean, obviously, a place like Amazon allows third-party sellers to access a very large network of consumers. But if you look at any of these marketplaces, you as a merchant, you are not building your own business. You are effectively renting customers from the marketplace. And I think for some merchants, that matters. But for a lot of merchants, if you think about your favorite brands or mine, James Purse or the Allbirds shoes I'm wearing or Bombas socks I'm wearing, they want to have a direct relationship with the people that are buying their products. And I think that more and more you see consumers, again, choosing to go direct whenever possible. So I think there's a place for marketplaces, and obviously Amazon has done a great thing there and is very valuable in that way. But I think consumers also want to have a direct relationship with the brands they're buying from. And that's the reason why you see companies like Mattel and Crayola and Herman Miller and Procter & Gamble use Shopify to go direct to consumer. These are brands that traditionally never did so, and now they're doing that.
Now, Harley, you know, Shopify shares have taken a pretty big dive since November, where they hit a high point, and obviously we're in the middle of broader market turmoil. But how concerned are you about this and going forward? You know, how are you thinking about this? What are investors missing?
I think Shopify was certainly a pandemic story. And I think obviously, you know, the stock reflected that. But I think what a lot of people are missing about the Shopify story is that on one hand, we're 10% of all e-commerce in the US. We have massive scale at the same time, and those economies of scale that come with it. At the same time, the 2 million stores on Shopify have an independent business. At the same time that happens, every 30 seconds or so, a brand new entrepreneur gets their first sale on Shopify. That means we are not only getting a larger piece of the pie, we're growing the pie itself. And all those stores that end up, businesses that end up being really successful will stay on Shopify indefinitely. And that's why you see companies like Figs and Allbirds go public and Gymshark and all these amazing brands that were built at their mom's kitchen table that are now category leaders built on Shopify.
I also want to ask about your, go ahead, finish your point.
I was going to say, in terms of, so I think we were a pandemic story. I think what often people miss is we're also this reopening story. Again, 80% of our, we had 80% growth in point of sale GMV. We have thousands of stores all over the world that use Shopify to power their physical store. You know, we saw social embedded commerce on services like Instagram and TikTok and now Twitter grow almost 400% year on year last quarter. So Shopify is really more than just an e-commerce provider or a pandemic story. We really are the world's retail operating system. And again, look at every one of your favorite brands or anyone listening, look at your favorite brands. You will start seeing Shop Pay as the payment gateway. You will start seeing Shopify power those brands. That's really important to us. And that's the reason why I think our future is very bright.
I also want to ask about your evolving governance story. Shopify recently made some changes to enhance Toby Lutka, the CEO's power. Some shareholders did oppose these changes. What are you hearing from shareholders now, you know, in terms of concerns about this change, and what has been Shopify's response?
I've spent the last few weeks with some of our largest investors and frankly, a lot of investors generally. And I think, we're grateful for their trust and continue to run the business. But the goal here really was modernizing our governance structure. We want to be a 100-year company. We're about 16 years into it. So we got a lot more time, 84 years left to go. And we want to ensure that we can run our business and make really good long-term decisions for investors, for merchants, for every stakeholder that's involved with Shopify. And we think this modernization, particularly around the governance structure, allows us to do that. I'll also tell you, having spent so much time with investors lately, that some of these investors that have been with us for the last 7 years since the IPO in May 2015, they believe more in Shopify now than ever before, and we're grateful for that. But we got a lot of room to grow, and we have a lot of new opportunities in front of us.
All right. Harley Finkelstein, always appreciate you joining us. Thanks for taking a wide range of questions today. Appreciate it. New York right now, Slack Frontiers, the company's annual conference where they've unveiled the latest innovations to a product that's become integral to the hybrid workplace. Joining us now, Stuart Butterfield, Slack co-founder and CEO, joining us from our studios in New York. Stuart, great to have you back with us, and thanks for coming in. Among the many announcements today, you're building out Slack Huddles, adding this new video feature. And I'm curious, with video conferencing, a very crowded market, what's the unique niche that you hope Slack's offering will fill?
Yeah, thank you, Emily. It's a little bit different than a video call. So Huddles, for those of you who are not familiar, used by tens of millions of people a week on Slack. And up till now, they've been audio only, and the intention is a little bit different than like a call that has a scheduled start time and end time. They're more for serendipitous, spontaneous conversations. And they've been really valuable in that respect. Fastest growing feature in Slack's history. People love it. So we're adding a little bit more of a co-working space. And I think there's a difference between, on the one hand, meetings, and the other hand, people working together and happening to use computers at the same time. We're definitely on the far left edge of that spectrum. And I think that I, like all of the people in the audience, will be on many, many more video calls years from now. But I think there's also like a whole set of tools that kind of became obvious that they're desirable during the pandemic, but we're just starting to see some of them now. Some of them will come from Slack, some of them will come from others. It's actually a pretty exciting time in enterprise software, in so far as enterprise software can be exciting at all.
Indeed. Of course, you know, there's competition here from Zoom and Google Meet and Microsoft Teams and Cisco WebEx. And in the same way that you're kind of moving on to, let's say, Zoom's turf a little bit, you've got Zoom announcing some chat features. Are you at all concerned about them taking Slack market share?
No, not at all. And to be clear, we at Slack are a happy Zoom customer, and I don't expect that to go anywhere. There just is a lot of use cases that that aren't covered by the 30-minute video call. There's also a huge amount of stuff that Zoom does that I don't think Slack will ever do, and also vice versa. But we're at this moment where it really feels like, I mean, I'm personally as optimistic as I ever have been in the last 20 years, but it really feels like there's an opportunity to create a couple of brand new categories. And in the same way that everyone has the standard set of email and calendar and word processor and spreadsheet, there's a couple more slots there that the pandemic made clear were really important. And so we're excited to spend a lot of time experimenting there and releasing new stuff.
Now, you don't have to worry about this as much now that Slack is part of Salesforce. And I wonder actually if there's some relief that you actually don't have to worry about the market meltdown. But you've been building companies for more than 20 years. You lived through the dot-com boom and bust. What's your take on what's happening with the economy right now? If Elon Musk has a super bad feeling about it, how does Stuart Butterfield feel?
Well, so I'm pretty old at this point. I had graduated from high school in 91, so I worked through the 1992 recession, right through the dot-com crash, that whole roller coaster, 2008, of course, as well, and a couple of other littler ones. I don't want to suggest that there's no dislocation and there's no like immediate negative impact for a lot of people in the short term, but at the market level, I see this kind of working itself out over maybe it's 6 months if we're super, super lucky, maybe if it's 18 months, if it's a little bit more realistic. But we do come out the other side, and so many great companies, including Slack, were started, you know, the company that became Slack started in 2009, kind of right in the absolute bottom part of the trough. So I think there's also a lot more opportunity now.
Interesting. So how do you think Silicon Valley looks different after this? I mean, if it's not a major dislocation, is it just a sort of evolution?
Yeah, I mean, so if we're talking about like just stock prices, I think multiples have come down to a pretty realistic level now. And so now we'll see if people can deliver the earnings that are expected, then we'll kind of stay in the same box for a while. The bigger question is whether we imagine a recession that would really impact this. But I think something else is going on at the same time, which is we've really realized the importance of all the digital infrastructure that supports productivity and collaboration. And just to make that like a little bit more tangible for people, if you go back to March of 2020 and imagine like a parallel universe where you could keep traveling for work and use conference rooms and commute, go to the office, all of that stuff, but you took away the software, all of these companies would have just disintegrated in like 24 hours. So at some point in the last 20 years, we switched from a world where the physical HQ was more important than the digital to the other way around. And yes, we use digital HQ as a marketing term, but I just mean, obviously, all of these companies continue to exist. And when that happens, I think there's a lot more interest in investment. You know, the worst case scenario is a chief information officer who views technology as like HVAC for the building. Like, you're just trying to get it as cheap as possible, as opposed to an investment in the organization's overall effectiveness. And the latter case is really what we're seeing with customers.
Now, Slack is becoming more and more integral to all kinds of workforces and has been in the news recently because the January 6th committee has asked Twitter for Slack messages tied to their decision to ban former President Trump, etc. I'm so curious for your thoughts on this. If Slack has been subpoenaed, I know Twitter has refused to hand this information over. And if you were subpoenaed, if Slack would comply?
I got to be honest, now at this point, I have no idea if we've been subpoenaed or not. I don't think so. You know, obviously we have a range of customers. In fact, what a softball opportunity to mention, we also announced GovSlack today, the FedRAMP High version of Slack used by like Lockheed Martin and the U.S. Army software factory. But there's a lot of different compliance requirements, message retention rules, and stuff like that. And I think that the investigations are generally going to be of Slack's customers, not of Slack.
That was going to be my next question, your effort to attract more government agencies. How exactly do you intend to do that? How do you plan to handle some of these very sticky issues like privacy?
Yeah, well, we have government customers in 20 different countries, and some of those have been long established. I think there's about 13 U.S. federal agencies using Slack, but there's also state, local, municipal usage. There's usage in Australia, in the UK, in Japan, in France, in Germany. And the kind of benefit that Slack brings to any organization that uses it are obviously there for the government as well. And I think there might be an opportunity to create a little bit more of a fabric that goes through the whole federal government, because those agencies are pretty autonomous, and it's much, much harder, kind of notoriously harder for them to coordinate than it should be.
All right. Slack CEO Stuart Butterfield, always good to have you on the show. Thanks for checking out to our New York studios. Appreciate you stopping by. Elon Musk says Tesla's new plants in Germany and Texas are losing billions of dollars as the EV maker tries to ramp up production. In a video just posted online that was taped 3 weeks ago, the Tesla CEO's comments offer new insight into the days leading up to his decision to cut costs by laying off employees. The staff reductions will affect about 10% of Tesla's salaried workforce over the next 3 months. Coming up, we are going to head to Toronto for a conversation with Jeffrey Katzenberg, fresh off a panel at the Collision Conference about disrupting legacy industries, something he knows a thing or two about. Plus, we'll get his thoughts on the current economic climate and where he's putting his money these days and a company he's invested in. That's all coming up next. This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Welcome back to Bloomberg Technology. I'm Emily Chang in San Francisco. It was a choppy day for tech stocks as the market tried to make up its mind on the Fed and risks of recession. Where do we land? Bloomberg's Ed Ludlow back to unwind it all. Ed?
Yeah, so we're like modestly lower, right, across multiple indices, especially tech indices. You look at the NASDAQ 100, off by around 0.2%. Outsized selling in semiconductors, chip stocks, some of the worst performers and biggest drags on both the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ 100. You also see the NYSE FANG Plus Index, which is made up of those mega caps and some U.S. listed shares of Chinese tech companies, modestly lower, but they've been higher during the session. We kind of swung between gains and losses. The market trying to make up its mind about the Fed's ability to fight inflation without causing a recession. Don't take my word for it. Have a listen to Fed Chair Jay Powell.
It is our goal. It is going to be very challenging. It has been made significantly more challenging by the events of the last few months, thinking there of the war and commodities prices and further problems with supply chains. And the question of whether we're able to accomplish that is going to depend to some extent on factors that we don't control.
So the market kind of seizing on the idea, this is the biggest admission so far that there's a real risk of hard landing or recession. We had a lot of other things to say, right? The labor market still incredibly tight. The economy still incredibly robust. You've got some of the tech movers really interesting, especially in regards to the news cycle. Look at Amazon up 0.25%. News out of a leaked memo where Amazon's talking about the turnover in its workforce, for example, being very high relative to other industries, it being a real concern. Well, what happens to that labor market as we move towards a Fed that's fighting inflation, not just with interest rates, but the shrinking of its balance sheet? And the other name that just catches my eye with regards to the demand story, because according to Fed Powell, the demand is still there. Netflix up 4.7%. According to reports from the Wall Street Journal, considering an ad tier for one of its subscription models, basically ad support in conjunction with names like Google, Comcast. You have some interesting guests coming up. I'd kind of be interested in their take about Netflix, one of the worst performers year to date, wasn't really participating in the rally of recent days, but having a great day on Wednesday.
All right, interesting to say the least. Thank you, Ed. Well, despite fears that the U.S. is heading towards a recession as inflation drives up costs and some companies start layoffs, there was a more upbeat tone at this year's Collision Conference, where 35,000 people showed up to hear about the future of technology. Joining me now from Toronto, Jeffrey Katzenberg, founding partner at WonderCo and former chair of Disney, also CEO of DreamWorks, of course, along with Hari Ravichandran. He is the founder and CEO of Aura, an online cybersecurity firm and one of Katzenberg's investments. Jeffrey, Hari, thank you both for joining us. I know you've just been on stage talking about disrupting legacy industries. And Jeffrey, this is, of course, something you know a thing or two about. So tapping you as an investor first, given everything you've seen, everything you've tried to do, what industries do you see right now that are most ripe for disruption?
Well, whether it's right for disruption or not, I think that the place of opportunity today that we're quite focused on continue to be is on cybersecurity, both for enterprise and for the consumer. I think it will have faced less headwinds in a down recession economy than many industries. Also think the future of work continues to be a place of great opportunity. The disruption out of COVID has been extreme in terms of the workforce, and the tools that it needs today in terms of productivity, of collaborating, sharing, the moving of information and people, I think, is going to be a place of tremendous innovation over these next couple of years. So there are bright spots, but no question we're in for choppy times.
Interesting. Hari, you know, there's actually a huge number of cybersecurity unicorns out there right now, and especially, you know, many companies which raised at hefty valuations when times were good. How do you think Aura stands out on that list?
Look, I mean, this is my second go around building a business. The first time we went through the down cycle in 2000, 2001, again in 07, 08. And you learn a lot of lessons having been through the cycle. So this time around, we're very focused on keeping the fixed core, the fixed cost of our business low, looking for opportunities where there's availability for asymmetric risk-reward payouts, whether it's M&A, organic growth vectors, et cetera. But keeping the core of our business quite tight and making sure that we're mindful of cost, of burn, and having raised a lot of capital last year, we're well set up, so it's really something that we have to stay focused to make sure we're creating a lot of runway and continue to keep focusing on our product.
Yeah, and the other thing, Emily, is that Aura is a mature business. It's got 2 million customers, almost 300 million of revenue. It's a profitable business and a fair amount of wind in its sails right now in terms of its growth. So this is growth, but it's profitable growth. I think that sort of makes it, you know, in a slightly unique category right now.
So, Jeffrey, I mean, given that you've also seen a number of downturns, run companies through downturns, how pronounced do you think this one in particular is going to be? Is this a recession with a big R or a little R? Is it inevitable?
You know what? You just went way above my pay grade, Emily. And, I just have to say, I think, and this is what I admire so much about Hari and how he's running his business, you plan for the worst and you hope for the best. And what I mean by that is that, you know, he really has buttoned down his business. He's running it, you know, on a smart basis, on a profitable basis. But this is also a time of great opportunity. And there are going to be things for us to do, whether it's in M&A, you know, direct to consumer. You know, the ad market's probably going to become more favorable. So you got to be able to play offense and defense, you know, at the same time. You need an offensive team and a defensive team, and that's what I think Hari has built well for this company.
Well, speaking of offense and defense, in part the promise of cybersecurity is, you know, the ability to play really good defense. And we've been warned so many times about the threat from Russia in the midst of this ongoing war on Ukraine. Hari, how big are the threats out there on the cyber landscape? And how do you see that threat evolving as we go through this, you know, potentially pronounced economic crisis for 6-18 months or longer?
I mean, I think it started with COVID. As people were moving more and more online, a lot more data started moving online as well. And, you know, whether you're looking at sort of nation state to nation state attacks or you're looking at attack on enterprises, the interesting thing we see is some of those were prevalent. They're getting a lot more sophisticated. But the new thing that we're starting to see is there's an acceleration of the sophistication of attacks on families and consumers. So it's going all the way from nation to nation to enterprise and consumers and family. You know, I do think that over the next kind of 12 to 18 months, the trend doesn't seem to be slowing down. From what we can see, there's a new variant of a different kind of an attack happening every week. And, you know, criminals seem to be enjoying their work, and it's showing at this point.
So, Emily, an interesting statistic is that in the last 12 months, the amount of theft, digital theft, versus burglary has actually now surpassed it. So there's actually more criminal activity, theft going on against all of us as consumers on our digital footprint than in our homes and our apartments and around our physical goods. And that trend is actually accelerating. So that value right now is, I think, in terms of what Aura is solving for, is, you know, really, really strong and only going to get stronger.
Jeffrey, I have to ask, given, of course, what you saw with Quibi and your long history in the entertainment business, what is your thought on the collapse of Netflix's stock?
Emily, can I congratulate
you? Sure. So
can I congratulate you on that? It took you 8.5 minutes to say the word Quibi out loud. Thank you.
You got
the over. You got the over, not the under, but go for it. Yes, I'm sorry.
It is not the only thing you're going to be remembered for if I have anything to say about it. But I do want to know what you think about what's happening in streaming right now, the collapse in Netflix's stock. You know, have we hit a peak, and is it all downhill from here?
No. Here's what I would say. You know, truly one of the great entrepreneurs of our time is Reed Hastings. You know, everybody were naysayers a decade ago when he came along with this idea of streaming. They were all naysayers when he came along with this idea for, you know, binging of content. You know, there's so many things that, you know, popular opinion were contrary to him and his vision for that company. He's built a great company. There's no question that, you know, it is actually, you know, hit a rough patch for sure. But the last thing I would do right now today is bet on Reed Hastings being down, let alone out. So you asked me, do I think, you know, what is the future of streaming? The future of streaming is going to be strong, likely more consolidation. So there's a lot more competition today. There's a lot more offerings out there today, more than all of us can consume. And so with that, there are going to be winners and losers. Do I think Netflix is going to be in the winner column? For sure. Is it going to see $700 a share soon? Probably not.
I wonder if you think Disney and CEO Bob Chapek are in the winner column too. I mean, obviously you have a long history there. You know, we've seen, you know, some tumult in the executive suite. You know, what does succession look like there, and how does Disney fit into the future of the entertainment business?
100% Disney will also be in that win column. You know, if you had to pick today, you would say Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Disney, Warner Discovery. They're all going to, in some fashion, shape, or form, be in the win column. You know, once again, you know, Chapek has a complicated hand to play. Probably no company had more of its businesses adversely affected by COVID. I mean, literally, Broadway shut down, theaters shut down, theme parks shut down, cruise ships shut down. Do I have to keep going? And, you know, he's trying to navigate now, you know, sort of the next renaissance of Disney. It's a high bar. It's a big challenge. My guess is he's up to it.
Jeffrey, I appreciate you humoring us and putting on your entertainment legend hat, as well as your investor hat. Jeffrey Katzenberg, WonderCo, Hari Ravichandran of Aura, coming to us from the Collision Conference in Toronto. Thank you both. Time now for our crypto report. Bitcoin trading once again around the $20,000 level, moving in tandem with falling stocks. This is concerns about a global recession grow. And while some crypto companies are laying people off, others are more optimistic, even about the near future. I want to talk about all this and more with Bloomberg's own Hannah Miller. Hannah, Falcon X raising a big round today. How? In the midst of a very cold crypto winter.
Yeah, no, it's an exciting company that's now valued at $8 billion, up from a $3.75 billion valuation from its last fundraise. And this is a company that has a lot of interesting stuff about it. Its founder has a really impressive background. He was formerly at Google. And this funding round came together in the past few weeks, even as market conditions were changing. So it's super exciting, especially when you see other companies like BlockFi looking to raise at down valuations.
Well, we're back to $20,000 for Bitcoin, but the CEO of Binance says the worst part is probably over. Is he right?
I think CZ is being a bit optimistic here. There's still a lot of fragility in the market. We could see trouble for other lending platforms. We've already seen Celsius and Babel hit. And there's still a lot of uncertainty revolving around regulation and also security. You know, hacks and scams have just been a lingering problem for the crypto industry.
We've seen layoffs at Coinbase, layoffs at Robinhood. You know, when you're talking to your sources, talking to your companies, just how bad is it, or how bad does it feel on the inside of some of these organizations?
Yeah, so I've been told by multiple people to expect more layoffs in the future, that this is going to be a trend after a rash of overhiring last year. And basically, people believe that this crypto winter is going to last for another 6 months to a year, but that it will be shorter than the previous one because we have clearer uses for blockchain now. I'm thinking decentralized finance, gaming, and NFTs. That'll help people stay interested in crypto and blockchain.
All right. Well, Hannah, we'll continue to follow your reporting on all of this. Bloomberg's Hannah Miller, thanks so much. Coming up, Apple's first union and what it means for a potential wave of tech unions across the country. We'll talk about that next. This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop. Customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Big tech has long been hostile to organized labor, but as of late, there have been some serious moves to change that. This past weekend, employees at a Maryland Apple store voted 65-33 to unionize. The move creates the first union of Apple retail employees in the United States. And running the campaign in Towson was the International Association of Machinists. David Sullivan, Eastern Territory General Vice President, joins us now to talk about this big win. And David, the votes we've seen at some of the Amazon warehouses have been a lot closer. Why do you think Apple employees voted here almost 2-1?
We're very pleased with the outcome of this. The workers in Maryland were very excited. They were very involved in this whole process. They came to us because of our presence in the community, and we spent a lot of time with them over the long period of time talking to them who we are, what we do, and they were just very, very excited about having the opportunity to organize and have a say in their future.
Now, Apple hasn't responded to this union vote directly, but in the past, as news about the forming of a possible union broke, they did tout their benefits. They've touted what these workers are paid. Do you think this vote in Maryland will result in more unions being formed at Apple across the United States?
I do, 100%. We've received many, many phone calls from across the country, from coast to coast right now. And it's the outpour has been very good. It's definitely a wave, and we're very pleased with it. Workers had to put a lot on the line down in Maryland to stand up and have a say in their future. And we're hoping that other workers in Apple see that they were able to do it. They didn't buy into some of the anti-union rhetoric that was out there, that the machinist union, we do a lot of good things. These are very highly skilled employees. And we're a very highly skilled union. So we're very pleased that they were able to hold tight, hold strong. And when they walked out that door and you heard the screams, that was the sound we want to hear across this entire state, country.
How will Apple have to deal with the unions? Like, what kind of discussions and agreements will have to be had?
Typically what we'll do is we'll try to do a meet and greet. We will send the letter. We're going to be certified, hopefully, at the end of the week. It's usually about a 7-day process. We should be certified without any issues. Once we're certified, I'll send a letter to Apple, to the CEO, and request to meet with them. And then we'll start the process to collectively bargain a contract for the employees.
And what will change for workers at unionized stores?
Everything. Their whole world's going to change. They'll have the ability to have a say in their future. They'll have a voice on the job. Scheduling is a big thing for them. They love their job. They do a lot of great stuff. And, they connect people to these products that, we can't figure them out. We go to these stores. We meet with them. Highly technical, highly skilled. They help us get our stuff together. It's for them, I think that because they do love their job, they want to have more say in like their schedule, just anything to do with their future, working conditions, safety on the job. They'll have the ability to do that.
We're seeing a similar conversation happening at Amazon, and I actually spoke to Amazon CEO Andy Jassy about union efforts at Amazon warehouses. Take a quick listen to what he had to say.
We happen to think they're better off without a union for a number of reasons, including the fact that, it's much harder when you have a union to have a direct relationship with your manager and to get things done quickly.
Respond to that, David?
Yeah, I think that's silly, to be honest with you, just to be frank. For us, the union is, it's the people there, the people on site, the employees at that store, they are the union. They keep trying to say it's a third party coming in and they're going to not be able to be personal and have friendships. That's absolutely false, 100% not true. The union is the people, on site there, and the relationships can continue. We have great relationships with many, many companies that we work with. So I wouldn't expect anything different from a CEO from Amazon.
How long does a union last for? Will this have to be renewed? And is this going to be an ongoing fight even in Towson, whether or not it happens beyond?
No, what we'll do is we usually negotiate a contract, typically the 3-year contracts, but once it's officially certified, we'll be the bargaining agent for them, and hopefully it goes forever.
And last quick question, tech has so far been, fairly immune to these kind of union negotiations. How do you imagine this could change the tech industry? We've got about 30 seconds left.
I think it's going to be a great change. I think that these are kind of the workforce that
needs a union. They're not a traditional, you know, what we would call a traditional union. So they've been kind of left behind on that. And now they're standing up saying they want more. They want to be able to negotiate over hours of work, working conditions, all the things that a union does. So I think it's going to, when workers around the country, U.S. and Canada, see what we're doing, I think they're going to step up and want to be part of this. I'm very excited. I don't think it's going to slow down. I think it's going to keep moving forward.
All right. David Sullivan, General Vice President at the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. Thank you for joining us. That does it for this edition of Bloomberg Technology. We're back tomorrow with Cloudflare CEO Matthew Prince, ProtonMail CEO Andy Yen to talk big tech privacy. You don't want to miss it. This is Bloomberg.
The Bloomberg Sustainable Business Summit returns to London on April 25th for a solutions-driven look at the sustainable business and finance landscape, looking at the latest trends in ESG regulations, supply chain innovation and transition finance. Speakers include leaders from CDP, Emirates Environment Group, Seedtrace, COA and more. Summit advisors include City Commercial Bank, Red Sea Global and Schneider Electric. Visit BloombergLive.com/SBS2024 to learn more.